You're listening to a Share Radio podcast.
Hello and welcome once again to Share Food on Share Radio, where we glorify in great cooking, great ingredients, and sometimes great flavours as well. No taste testing going on in this edition of Share Food, which is a tiny bit disappointing for myself and Sarah Alcock, who's here from Sainsbury's Magazine.
Hello.
You've lucked out this week, I'm afraid, haven't you?
Well, I did go to Rum Kitchen and I get to eat all of that food, so...
Yeah. Which kind of left me out of the food loop that day.
I'm sorry.
I'll get my own back at some point. Yeah, we're going to meet Alex Potter. We're going to hear from him on his own particular food philosophy, aren't we?
Yes, so he's one of the owners of Rum Kitchen. They've just opened up in Brixton. Amazing cocktails. Just make sure you have some food along with it, otherwise you'll end up leaving.
Are they
feeling
stern
slightly
stuff,
worse
they?
For wear? They are stern stuff, but they are good.
We meet the man behind Charlie Bigham's meals, and you may or may not know, it is actually Charlie Bigham.
Yeah. He's a real person.
It is his name on the box. And I didn't know that the company had actually been going for something like 20 years. I thought it was a relatively new brand, but it's not.
But it's not. They've been around for ages. You know, that fish pie's been going for a while.
Absolutely. Those meatballs and that lasagna. Big favourites in Sainsbury's stores, of course. We meet a man who dives for his own scallops. And how about this in pursuit of good food? He also smokes a lot of his own meats and fish as well.
And he's a chef. So he does all of the fetching of the ingredients and then he cooks them and then he goes home and has to do the washing up.
And he's in charge of a rather vibrant kitchen garden as well. This is at Longville Manor on the island of Jersey, where we talk to Andrew Baird in this edition. And as well as that, we'll be talking about meal prep. Now, I know of people who lay out an entire week's worth of outfits on a Sunday night, so they're really kind of, you know, ready to go on a Monday morning first thing. And I do know people who cook ahead and freeze meals and that kind of thing. But we are going to talk a little about how you can actually have everything ready to go in the Tupperware. It's going to keep for the next few days so that you do not have to worry about your lunches, particularly when you're on the go, on the move during the week.
And there are different foods, obviously, that work better kept in boxes. Don't reach for the avocado.
Exactly.
That will go brown very quickly.
There are some things that you don't want necessarily sitting in the fridge so long, but other things that survive perfectly.
Work very
well. So we'll be hearing from a few people who can give us some hints and pointers on that in this edition to come. We always invite you, of course, to share your dishes, your meal plans, your meal prep, and the occasional failure as well, using the hashtag on social media.
Yes. I made this. Hashtag I made this. Yes. Please do share.
All that to come on this edition of Share Food here on Share Radio.
Let's eat.
Now, we start this edition of Share Food here on Share Radio by catching up with a man whose name is all over the food he produces. He's Charlie Bigham, and he's some 20 years in the trade now, making special meals for one, but perhaps better well known for meals for two. A regular fixture in Sainsbury's, of course. He joins us right here on Share Food. Charlie, welcome to the programme. And it strikes me that you've made a real success out of those particular dishes which are well-worn UK favourites.
Well, I think that's it. You know, we are, our mission is to make really tasty food and food that tastes as if you cooked it yourself at home. So we're real sticklers for quality, and that's the quality of our ingredients, how carefully we make it. You know, we have a very brilliant and motivated, well-trained team of chefs here who make our food. But it's about sitting down at the end of a busy day and being able to have, and that's why our food is too, it's about having a decent chat over over a decent meal. Mm. You know, we all lead terribly busy lives. And for some people, that occasion happens, you know, once a week. For some people, it's several times a week. For some people, it's on a monthly basis or only a few times a year. But what we've discovered as we talk to our consumers, it kind of spreads right across people. It doesn't matter where you live or, it's not our food isn't all about being terribly posh and only for people who've got lots of money. Our food is about being really great value and, you know, just giving you a chance to have a night off from cooking. A lot of the people who buy our food are really keen cooks themselves and really mind about what they eat, but they just don't want to cook from scratch 7 days a week.
Exactly. And you've been going for 20 years, which is amazing, but you must have seen kind of food trends and what people want changed quite a lot over that time. You know, what kind of changes have you seen with what people are looking for?
Well, I think the interesting thing is there's been huge changes and almost no change at the same time. I mean, if I look at, you know, the our best-selling recipes...
Is it the fish pie?
Today, I bet it's the lasagna.
Pie, fish pie, lasagna, chicken tikka, steak and ale pie, chicken and mushroom pie, a cottage pie. Yeah, these are some of our best-selling dishes. Mm. All of those dishes could have been sold 20 years ago. So I think what's kind of quite interesting is despite all the huge changes that you've just referenced, some of them, you know, more people interested in eating vegetarian food or vegan food or, you know, different diets that come and go, you know, macrobiotic diets and all of this and raw food and gluten-free. But all these things that have come and go and made actually the whole food scene, I think, sort of richer and more dynamic. Still, there is a really strong demand for people who want to buy, you know, some actually quite traditional recipes.
I'm wondering if you've deliberately gone for what is recognisable and what is for a lot of people comfort food. You know, the top five or seven dishes.
I mean, to an extent, our job is to make the food that people, you know, it's kind of self-evident. You're running a business. You've got to make the product that people want to buy. And you know, for us, that's making the recipes that people want to buy. And so we have got, you know, some of our bestsellers, as I've mentioned, are pretty traditional recipes. And then at the other end of the scale, we are a bit more adventurous. So we also have a Moroccan chicken tagine and an Indonesian chicken satay and a Vietnamese curry. And, you know, so we have a range as we make 32 different recipes in all. So we've got a range of food we make. And the food world has changed over the last 20 years since I started the business immeasurably. I mean, you know, I think, especially I spend a lot of time in London, and, you know, the dynamism and excitement of what happens in London and all the restaurants that are opening and some closing every year is brilliant. And it's not just restaurants, it's street food that's really taken off in the last few years.
It's not just the food, it's not just the ingredients, it's actually how we eat and how we shop for our food
exactly,
as well has changed.
I think we're very, very lucky in the UK. In some ways, you know, if I look at a country like Italy, and I love Italian food, but Italy is, you know, Italians are somewhat hidebound by their fantastic food heritage, and there's much less experimentation that happens generally in a country like Italy, or dare I say even France, than in the UK. We're open for trying everything.
Yeah, we are. Now, it's interesting you talk about having chalked up 20 years now in the business, because I'm thinking that you're a much more youthful company than that. And I wonder if it's just that your growth over the last few years in particular has been rapid or has been changeable, or the curve has been ever more upward than perhaps it's been in the early part of those 20 years.
Well, to be honest, I mean, in terms of, you know, our growth as a business, I mean, our long-term growth over those 20 years, I think we've averaged about 15% growth a year. This year that we're in at the moment, we're growing a little bit over 20%, so a tiny bit faster than against our average. But, you know, obviously, to get to that average, we've had some years a bit under 15 and some years a bit over. So we've grown a bit every year. And I think, you know, that's what happens if you have a business. You focus on the long term, you focus on consumer and doing a good job, you do grow every year. And then, you know, with that growth, you kind of reach. There are moments of critical mass when just, you know, a whole new swathe of people notice you for the first time.
Do you have that J.R. Hartley moment when you walk into a branch of Sainsbury's or whatever and you see your name on the shelf?
I'm quite used to it. And when I walk into a Sainsbury's shop, I love going into the shops that our food is sold in, and not for that moment of, gosh, how lovely to see our food in the shop. What I love about it is standing there and watching people pick up our food and look at it and hopefully put it in their trolley. I usually, if somebody's dithering for too long, I usually step up and have a chat with them and show them it's the right thing to do.
You step up to people and whisper in their ears, I really recommend the meatballs.
I step up and have a chat, and people always get surprised when I introduce myself, and I usually look a bit unsure, and I sometimes have to. I'm not just some mad nutter trying to fool you. It is me, but it's lovely. I love those conversations with people. Mm. And quite often I talk to people and I say, yes, I've been buying this food for years and love it, and I find out which their favourite recipe is and get some feedback, which is...
Share food with Sainsbury's Magazine. Food and drink brought to life by the team behind Sainsbury's very own food magazine.
Our big thanks to Charlie Bigham joining us on this edition of Share Food here on Share Radio, in association, of course, with Sainsbury's Magazine. Sarah Alcock is alongside from the magazine team. Still to come, we'll talk a little about how to prep up your meals and your lunches in particular for the week ahead. And we'll meet a man who hand dives for his own scallops, as well as smoking his own fish, smoking his own meat, and growing a lot of his own produce as well for the outstanding hotel Longville Manor on Jersey. That to come on this edition of Share Food.
Hi, I'm Simon Rose. Join me each Friday at 6 p.m. for the Entrepreneur Show with Sage Pay. Payment solutions for every business. This is what happened last week.
We sort of say every great day starts the night before, and what we want to do is make people's lives better, but through the medium of sleep.
The Entrepreneur Show, brought to you with Sage Pay, each Friday evening at 6 p.m. or on demand via the website, Audioboom channel or Share Radio app.
The Director's Briefing on Morning Money from 6:45 a.m. Sponsored by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise.
The majority now are accessing it via mobile. So about 40 million of them are using 4G. The introduction of 4G over the last few years has actually helped this shift to mobile devices as being sort of the single most used device to go online.
The Director's Briefing on Morning Money. Sponsored by Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Accelerating next. Sharing ideas about money. This is Share Radio.
I'm Sue Dugan, and alongside from the magazine is Sarah Alcock. And we're also inviting you to share with us your food triumphs and maybe the odd cooking disaster using the hashtag on social media, IMadeThis, at Share Radio UK or at Sainsbury's Mag.
Tried and tasted.
Now, I bet we all know someone in our office who is well prepared, should we say smug, who has everything just so, including their lunchbox as well. Well, we're going to focus on making time to prep up a meal, particularly with packing a really good, wholesome and healthy lunch as well, and often doing it a couple of days in advance. Hannah Mills, who's an online health coach and fitness guru, and Sophie Bembo, who writes the website sophiebembo.com, joined Rita Lobo this week with their top Make It Ahead and Keep It Healthy tips. And here Rita starts by asking them if it's all about making healthy choices.
It's more so about being prepared, like Sophie said, especially if you've got a busy life, busy work career. You need to be a bit savvy with your time. So it's about being smart with it and also keeping it fresh so it's nice and enjoyable at the same time.
And why did it become so popular? Do you think it has something to do with the Instagram effect, with the fitness blogger effect? You know, all those pretty pictures of those neat little Tupperwares all lined up with all the fruit and the grilled chicken. Do we all want to emulate this sort of picture-perfect lifestyle, Sophie?
I think, yeah, obviously people look to Instagram and social media to get inspiration and to get, you know, some kind of advice. Obviously, it's not always as pretty as it seems on Instagram as in real life. But definitely, you know, things like photos and articles can help people to create their own style of meal prepping at home. Definitely, yeah.
What do you think, Hannah?
Yeah, I think Instagram, like Sophie says, is very inspirational for, it helps people to get ideas, which is important that they can emulate themselves. I think as well as Instagram, I think Snapchat and other things like that, keeping it real though, you'll see a lot of food prep on there, which doesn't look so Instagram perfect, which is important as well, because I don't think every Tupperware looks like that every day.
I know when I try to meal prep, it's definitely not as color coordinated as some of the posts I see online. But what are some of the things that work the best? I found that, you know, some of the fresher fruits, fresher vegetables don't last that well towards the end of the week. What are some of your tips for someone getting started? What kind of ingredients are healthiest and that keep best, Hannah?
Well, if you use raw veggies rather than like the salad base, so chopping up things like carrots, celery and things like that, they do tend to keep a lot better and fresher. Another thing, if you were tight on time and wanted to keep it really fresh was to just make an extra portion at dinner time. Even if it's something like a simple prawn or chicken stir fry that you can take to work with you the next day and making an extra portion. Again, if you're tight for time, that's good. And it keeps it nice and full of whole foods, nutritious, fuel the body for the day.
What about you, Sophie? What are some of your top tips of things that work well in a Tupperware?
Yeah, I definitely agree with, you know, raw vegetables such as carrots and peppers and things like that, nice crispy lettuce. Also, if you've got enough time, I do tend to, like, I'll freeze some food as well for the end of the week. So things like I'll freeze like little batches of sweet potato mash or quinoa or frika, just so I know I can pull it out the night before and it'll be fine for the next day. And you can make chilies and soups and curries and things like that. They work really well. Obviously, I think meal prepping has got a bit of a bad rap with, you know, things that don't keep fresh for the whole week. Like, I'll never meal prep anything with an avocado in it, for example, or anything like tomatoes or anything. That's just something I'll prepare at the time. So it's nice and enjoyable and it tastes fresh as well. I think that's really important. So yeah, just a bit of common sense with which vegetables you're going to use in advance.
So some people that have stressful jobs or don't have a lot of time, they tend to sort of nip out and get a sandwich or get a meal deal, and it's not very healthy. And they tend to think that, you know, preparing lunch and bringing a full meal from home can be more complicated and time consuming than it is. What are some of the foods that make you feel good, make you sort of endure your office hours a little bit better, but that are also easy to make? What are some of your favorite recipes, Sophie?
Well, I think, I don't know about everyone else, but I love my snacks. And I find those are things that will get you through the day. And they're often things that will lead you off track as well. So if you can make, you know, just take some nuts into work and some protein, or you can make some protein balls that are really easy, or some carrot sticks and hummus. I think for me, those things really help me stay on track, because it's really easy just to go and buy a chocolate bar or a packet of crisps or just something quick and easy. But so for me, definitely snacks.
What about you, Hannah?
It is all about the snacks. When you sat at that desk, I think you crave that type of, sometimes it's boredom even. And if it is, then obviously Absolutely. Drinking water at that time is important. But in the morning, something like a spinach and tomato eggy breakfast muffin that you could have like at 11 o'clock, just keeping the fridge at work. And in the afternoon, something, we tend to have more of a sweet tooth in the afternoon. So your 3 p.m. like an energy ball, or like cottage cheese is also a really quick option. No prep time needed. So that, have it with some crudites and things like that.
The spinach and eggy muffin sounds like it requires a lot of preparation. How would you go about making that one, Hannah?
They are so quick to make. You literally just chop up the spinach and tomato, removing the seeds, whisk it with your eggs, bake them in the oven for 12 minutes. But you can take them the night, you can obviously bake them the night before and keep them in the fridge, and they'll last a few days. And they're a great source of protein and healthy fats. It'll help fuel you through the day, keeping you full till lunchtime. Also a good breakfast option from the go.
Would you say for someone starting out with meal prepping that maybe is a little bit intimidated by all of the things that they see online, all of those big complicated preps with hundreds of Tupperwares, would you say it's better to maybe start out with just taking lunch or just maybe taking some snacks? Or should you just really commit and go the full whole hog and prepare breakfast, snacks, lunches, and maybe even, you know, a on the way home dinner? What would you say?
I'd say definitely take it a step at a time. I don't think it's manageable to go full whack, because then you'll probably feel like you maybe that you failed a little bit if you don't get it dead on the next day. So making sure that you take your lunch, and maybe even just like some nuts to nibble on, and that's something you don't even need to prepare. And like I mentioned earlier, just simply making an extra portion the night before with your dinner that you're already making and just popping it in the Tupperware. If you did want to get a little bit more in advance, then batch cooking on a Sunday, a simple thing like a slow cooked chili, that's a really easy thing to do.
That sounds good.
You can freeze portions of that. You literally put it in there, it cooks for you throughout the day. So it's done for when you get back and for portions throughout the week.
Would you need a slow cooker for that? Or do you think you could do it in a Dutch oven or just a pan?
You probably could, but I think I personally love using the slow cooker, especially if you've got a busy schedule. You can just literally pop it in there, leave it for the day and come back and hey presto, it's smelling good.
Sophie, do you have any slow cooker recipes that you turn to, or is it too hot in Australia and you tend to keep it cool with the salads?
Well, it is winter here at the moment, so it's a bit chilly. But I don't use my slow cooker that much. I tend to just use, I'll cook my chili in a pot or pop it in the oven or, you know, whatever works for you. And I think that's the beauty with diet as well. You just got to do what works for you. Sometimes it's just a case of being organized means that you're not going to have those naughty treats, and that's enough. So I think just trying to realize what you want to get out of it. Is it that you're going to commit to this for 12 weeks because you're going on holiday, or is it just something that you just want to do because there's too many naughty options at work for you, you just want to get through the week, you know? So I think it depends on the person and their kind of lifestyle. So
at the Share Radio offices we have a cake table which is always laden with delicious temptations. So definitely having your own healthy snacks. I tend to bring in bags and bags of tangerines, and that really helps me. What about if you're not based in a single place, if you don't have access to a microwave, or if you have to eat on the go, what are some good ideas of things that will still help you keep on track rather than grabbing for that sandwich, Sophie?
If you don't have much time, sorry, did you say?
Yeah, if you don't have much time, or if you're a person that's constantly on the go. So if you're not office-based and have access to a kitchen, for instance, what is a good thing that you can prep and carry with you that keeps well and is still easy and you can eat without, you know, needing to heat up and all of that?
Yeah, well, definitely. I really like just chopped salads, like just in a little jar, and then you can just pour your dressing over when you're ready to eat it. That's really nice and crunchy. You can make rice paper rolls. They keep really well with a nice kind of soy sesame dressing. You can also make like quinoa sushi. It's really easy to make.
How does that one work?
Wrap your quinoa and your chopped veggies in a nori sheet, and it's really delicious.
That sounds really good.
As we said before, you know, nuts and protein balls and things like that, or smoothies. If you've got a blender, smoothies are great when you're, you know, running out the door in the morning and you just want something that's going to fill you up.
I find with smoothies that I always tend to improvise the recipe with either what I have at home or something that I vaguely remember seeing online. And some of the combinations are real winners, but sometimes I really mess up, particularly when celery is involved. What are some of your favorites, Sophie?
Smoothies. Oh my God, I love my smoothies. I think it's obviously everyone's different, but I like making my own nut milk, so I'll make my own almond milk, but you don't have to go to that extreme. It just makes a really nice creamy smoothie with, you know, banana and some flax meal, some chia seeds, some maybe some peanut butter if you want to be a bit indulgent. And also just green smoothies. I love just filtered water and spinach, avocado, lemon.
Smoothies, I would tend to also use a nut-based milk with mine. I'll usually have it with a protein supplement, actually, just because it helps me feel fuller for longer. And having something like a nut butter in there, berries, frozen bananas work great, because especially if you're on the go, it'll keep it cooler for longer, or frozen berries. They tend to be a lot cheaper to buy as well, and obviously they stay fresher in your freezer at home.
Thank you again to Hannah Mills from the website wedgesandweights.com and Sophie Bembo, who you can find at sophiebembo.com, both with great tips on how to make ahead and prep up those meals and do it for health reasons particularly too. And don't forget, if you want meals that are easy to make, shortcuts that you can create ahead of time, don't forget to look at the latest recipes in the current edition of Sainsbury's magazine and the online menu section too.
Jargon Busters, leading you through the financial labyrinth.
0 hours contracts have hit the news and become a big political issue. They allow employers to hire staff with no guarantee of future work. They mean employees would work only when they're needed. Some 0 hours contracts require workers to take the shifts they're offered, meaning they don't have a guarantee of work, but must guarantee a supply of it if the employer needs them. Sick pay is often not included, although holiday pay should be. The Labour Force Survey of 2014 showed that around 700,000 people were employed on 0 hours contracts. That's just over 2.3% of the workforce. Despite fears that it may take advantage of low-paid workers, many workers claim to like the contract, as it can offer them flexibility to fit in work with their other commitments and their family lives. Some employers say that 0 hours contracts allow them to take on staff in response to fluctuating demand for their services, and they wouldn't be able to employ those extra workers full-time or offer them any guarantees if the 0 hours contract didn't exist. 0 hours contracts appear to be particularly popular in highly seasonal sectors, such as tourism and the hospitality industry.
Hi, I'm Simon Rose. Join me each Friday at 6 p.m. for The Entrepreneur Show with Sage Pay. Payment solutions for every business. This is what happened last week.
We sort of say every great day starts the night before, and what we want to do is make people's lives better, but through the medium of sleep.
The Entrepreneur Show, brought to you with Sage Pay each Friday evening at 6 p.m. or on demand via the website, Audioboom channel or Share Radio app.
The future belongs to the fast. The digital economy is driving business and industry into unprecedented transformation. Visionaries, disruptors, those bent on reinventing the way things get done, are turning to Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. With years of experience in delivering what's new and what's next, this new company is positioned better than ever to deliver the IT solutions to propel you into the future. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise. Accelerating next.
I'm Nick Peters. Join me for Shop Floor, the world of work and the workplace. This week, the corporate rebels from Holland on a mission to make jobs joyful.
The feeling of doing something you love and waking up in the morning, going to work and feeling inspired by what you're going to do that day, and coming back from work feeling even more inspired by what you've done.
Shop Floor, Sunday morning at 11, or listen again via the website or Share Radio app.
Tips for making the most of your ISA allowance, brought to you by the Share Centre. The new flexible ISAs. Every now and then, it's handy to be able to dip into your savings to pay an unexpected cost or give yourself a treat. The good news is that the government has now made ISAs more flexible, so you can take money out, then replace it in the same tax year without it counting towards your precious ISA allowance. Everything stays tax efficient, so you get to keep more of any profits you make. Not all ISA providers are offering this flexibility, so make sure you check with yours. This ISA Spotlight has been brought to you by the Share Centre, providers of flexible ISAs at share.com. The Share Centre Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Tax allowances and ISA benefits could change and your capital is at risk. Please note, you might miss out on some income or growth while transferring.
Want to keep up with the latest earnings updates from the States? I'm Chris Hill, and I'm inviting you to join me and the entire Motley Fool Money radio show team right here on Share Radio. Direct from Washington, D.C., each Monday at 2 o'clock, we'll bring you the news, views, and analysis of the U.S. stocks making headlines.
Everybody needs money. That's why they call it money.
That's Motley Fool Money, every Monday afternoon at 2, right here on Share Radio.
Share Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to Share Food on Share Radio with Sue Dugan and the team behind Sainsbury's Magazine.
Share Food with Sainsbury's Magazine. Food and drink brought to life by the team behind Sainsbury's very own food magazine.
Now, we're about to pay a visit to outlet number 3 in the chain of Rum Kitchen in London, recently opened in Brixton. Sarah here has had the pleasure of making a visit.
Kitchen of Curiosity.
Yep, we've made it this week's Kitchen of Curiosity, mainly because I wasn't there. I have no idea what it was like. I can only go by the smiles of delight on Sarah Alcock's face. Now, this is outlet number 3 in a chain just opened at Brixton. And I know, Sarah, you did do a fair amount of drinking and a fair amount of eating as well. Let's hear how you got on.
So I'm in Brixton today and I've come to the new Rum Kitchen. And I'm here with Alex Potter, who's the owner. Hi, Alex.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. So we're going to talk a bit about the menu and what I have to look forward to later on when I eat here. What's your favourite thing on the menu?
Naturally, we're most well known for our jerk chicken, which is our top seller and sort of one of our heritage plays from Jamaica. We spent a huge amount of time developing that particular dish. It's slow cooked, it's marinated for 18 hours, slow cooked for 6, and then finished off in our bespoke wood and charcoal ovens, and which are basically cooked over applewood, spice and pimento to get that sort of incredibly succulent but also authentic flavour.
So obviously, Rum Kitchen, and we're in Brixton. Can you tell us a bit about the roots of where the restaurant came from?
Absolutely. We opened our first site in Notting Hill on All Saints Road. It was actually on the site of the famous Mangrove, a restaurant owned by Frank Critchlow, who was at the forefront of almost the Black Civil Rights Movement in the UK. And so it was a massive opportunity for us to use that history and develop a concept that suited the area at the time. You know, most Caribbean cuisine had sat in either very well cooked home comfort food or takeaways. There had been a couple of restaurants, but not a sort of unified popular culture-esque brand. Three and a half years, myself and my business partner looked to develop a Caribbean inspired restaurant that played, honestly to authentic roots, but also gave a little modern twist on what we were doing.
And I know that there's like over 40 house cocktails on the menu. What should I choose later on?
It completely depends what your taste buds are. We cater for pretty much everything, but if you, a particular favourite of mine is the Rum Bustian, which is basically a deconstructed pina colada shaken over rice. And you've also got, if you prefer things that are a bit more sour, our rum sour. And then a new play that we've got over here is a Tiki Negroni. So our twist on a classic cocktail with a sort of rum hint, rum twist.
So obviously Brixton is a big bustling food scene. Was it an easy decision to come here?
I think Brixton is a incredible, incredible area of London with huge amounts of diversity. You can see that obviously within Brixton Market. When this site came up and the opportunity to join a thriving community, it was a pretty easy decision for us. And there's a natural, heritage piece, and it's one of the most densely populated, West Indian communities. There's a cool little Caribbean spot as well, fish wings and tings that do the most banging, saltfish fritters as well. You know, there's a huge amount. So lunch and getting fueled up pre-opening is no hard task.
And the sauces as well, you're pretty famous for. Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, this is the first site that we've actually bottled our homemade sauces. So we've got our Swamp Hot Sauce, which is a Scotch Bonnet blended hot pepper sauce. We've got our Jerk Drum Barbecue Sauce, which is, you know, what it says on the tin. You know, a barbecue-y, tangy, smoky, you know, great with chicken, great with barbecue. And then we have our Scotch bonnet mayo, which is not actually too hot, a really sweet, smoky mayo offering for all your dipping sauces.
I've just opened up the Swamp Hot Sauce. And that is pretty hot. Maybe I should try it on something next time. But also here is the Jerk Drum Barbecue Sauce. I could probably try this without coughing. Is it? I'll just try. It's got a kick, but there's so much flavour in there. It's kind of fruity.
Yeah, absolutely.
What goes into that one?
There's obviously you've got allspice, scallion, you know, molasses, which gives it the barbecue element, tomato, ginger, garlic. I mean, the list goes on. You could be playing around for a while until you get there. But it's a house secret. And the great thing is that every jerk sauce and every jerk marinade and every hot sauce is there's no unified sort of set rule. These are passed down through generations from parents, grandmothers, and grandfathers down to us and our chefs, which we're fortunate to have bottled the secret, as they say.
What should I eat later on?
Right. Well, you know, as we're most famous for our jerk chicken, so you must try our jerk chicken bowl, which is three pieces of jerk chicken thighs, boneless, served with black eyed pea rice and our house slaw. There's also some amazing 18-hour slow cooked pork belly ribs, finished off in the Burfa oven, and then and smoked, and with a, you know, a brilliant barbecue sauce.
Cool. Well, thank you very much for talking to me. I'm going to go and get a cocktail now from the bar.
Great. Nice to see you. Thank you.
Share food with Sainsbury's Magazine. Food and drink brought to life by the team behind Sainsbury's very own food magazine.
Our thanks, as ever, to the team at Rum Kitchen for joining us here on Share Food.
Share Radio is proud to present the Wise Alpha VCT and EIS Investor Forum that takes place on the 24th of November at 155 Bishopsgate in London. It's the UK's must-attend event for anyone who's interested in tax-efficient investing. Key speakers include Baroness Karen Brady and Leonora Walters from the Investors Chronicle. Buy your tickets throughout August and receive a 30% discount. Head over to www.vctandeisinvestorforum.com to get yours.
To grow your business tomorrow, you need to be paid today. Sage Pay offers simple, secure, and reliable payment solutions that make it easier to be paid and help your business grow faster. Customers pay however they like, wherever they are, online, on the phone, or in store. And with award-winning 24/7 support, you can get started, get paid, and get growing faster. Learn more at sagepay.co.uk, the UK's most recommended payment gateway, as confirmed by Trustpilot.
Sharing ideas about money. This is Share Radio. Jargon Busters, leading you through the financial labyrinth.
Like a game of top trumps on a huge financial scale, when it comes to credit ratings, the higher the better. You can apply credit ratings to almost any financial entity, be it a company, a government, a bond, or even a person. Credit ratings are important for borrowing money. The better your rating, the better rate of interest you will get on your debt. This is because it is generally considered that the higher your credit rating, the less likely you are to default on your debts. In the world of high finance and company debt, the ratings are made by independent companies, such as Standard & Poor's or Moody's. The highest rating you can get is AAA, and it goes all the way down to D's. A rating of B or lower is considered a high-risk investment or junk bond. There has been some debate recently about the value of rating agencies. That's partly because the agencies failed to reveal the underlying problems companies had in the run-up to the financial crisis of 2007. There is also criticism about the structure of the credit rating industry. Companies who want to have a rating pay the agency for their credit grade. It's like a student paying a teacher for their essay mark. It's led to concern that it's unhealthy for agencies to be paid by the companies they're meant to be judging.
Every Saturday morning and available as a download from the Share Radio website, the Share Radio mobile app, and from iTunes. This is Share Food with me, Sue Dugan, in association with Sainsbury's Magazine.
Share Food with Sainsbury's Magazine. Food and drink brought to life by the team behind Sainsbury's very own food magazine.
Sarah Alcock is with us for this edition of Share Food, and it's time for something special as we meet this week's tastemaker.
Tastemakers, the minds behind the food.
And this week's tastemaker is pretty awesome on many fronts. This week's tastemaker is somebody pretty awesome. He doesn't just grow his own herbs and fruits and vegetables at Longville Manor on Jersey, where he's been in charge for a number of years now. He smokes his own fish and he smokes his own salmon. And as you'll hear, he's a bit of a dab hand in a wetsuit too. More to be revealed as we meet Andrew Baird. Andrew, hello. It's really good of you to join us on this edition.
Great. Nice to be on board.
Thank you. And I wonder if you can tell us a little bit about Longville Manor. Tell us a bit about the establishment.
Well, Longville Manor has been, as a hotel, has been going, I suppose, quite a long time, since 1947. It's all worked very hard over the years. We've got a really sort of like solid management team. And I myself have been there for 26 years. Pedro Bento, managing director, he's been there 28, and then you've got Malcolm and Patricia Lewis, who are obviously family members and have been there, well, let's say, for longer than this.
So pretty so, yeah, Jersey, isn't it, the hotel Jersey?
It's quite unique. I mean, you know, a lot of hotels go through so many changes, you know, with different people, I suppose, trying to make them run as a business. And you know, we've just put our, you know, all of us put our heart and soul into the business, you know, whether we're, you know, like Mark and Patricia, owners or employees like us, which just love working there. Yeah, it's a special place. And I actually came from Yorkshire, which you
I really should have known by the accent.
I think it was 70 miles to the coast, so going to the coast was really a big day out, you know. And growing up, I thought water was sort of like a mucky brown colour until I came to Jersey, when obviously it's very different.
Now, this is where it gets even more remarkable, because for anybody who doesn't know the establishment, doesn't know you, Andrew, you're rather a champion when it comes to seafood. And you might not necessarily have been raised near the sea, but the sea is pretty much your second home. You dive for your own scallops, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's funny, but I'm one of these people. I suppose I've learned my own lesson. And I was telling somebody a story yesterday about how I lived in Stratford-upon-Avon for a couple of years and never went to a Shakespeare show. And I've been since, but at the time, I started to think, really, when as a chef you move around to these different places in the country and in fact in the world, you've really got to get the best out of the environment. And so, since that stage in my life, when I came to Jersey, I've really tried to sort of like embrace my local environment and get out of it as much as possible, really. And we, as youngsters, I suppose, when I first got to the island in sort of like the late teens, early 20s, catching these signs, you know, try dive, come and try scuba diving. And I put it off and put it off. And then eventually I just went for it. Not to try dive, as it were, but I signed up for the complete course. And it was in April. And for those of the listeners that know the sea, April's probably the coldest month. And it was a really cold winter. And the water was, I remember it because I've written it down in my logbook, the water was 6 degrees. And I thought to myself, there's no way I'm going to take this up as a hobby, but I'm going to get through this course.
Chef-dived scallops, that's what you should call them on the menu.
So what makes it, I mean, do you literally just, you know, grab what you can see and bring it back up to the surface, or is there an art, can you tell by the shell, perhaps? I don't know.
Do you know what? It's one of those things. Now, I suppose, I work in an extremely busy environment, not only at work, but you know, work, it's not just cooking these days. You're in, you know, I think if you're going to do it well, you're in tune with, you know, every supplier, you know, whether it be your meat supplier, your veg supplier, your dairy supplier, and time is scarce. So, yes, I do scuba dive, and yes, I do get scallops, but what it's given me is a real appreciation for what my full-time scallop diver has to do all year round, and it is really, really hard work. I mean, if you videoed him, you know, diving around, just picking these scallops, which are incredibly difficult to see at times. You know, sometimes you've only got literally, depending on the swell and the waves, you might only have a couple of feet in front of you to actually try and find them. And they've got a habit of burying themselves just underneath the sand, which makes it even harder. And then once you've got your catch, you've got to try and get it to the surface and then back onto the boat. And then the whole pressure preparation side of it starts kicking in. So it's a lot of work. And I really appreciate my full-time scallop diver.
But it also makes you realise
what he goes through. It's fantastic. And it's one of those ingredients I always try and keep on the menu. Want to support him. As a friend and a colleague, but you know, just through my appreciation of how they are handpicked, he doesn't take anything that's small or anywhere anything that's anywhere near small, and it's you know, going back to sort of like harvesting seafood respectfully and sustainably, you know, rather than getting the trawler coming through and just you know, taking everything up with starfish and brittle stars and small sole and you know, everything else they can catch. You know, these are hand-picked, and you know, it's worth the effort.
It makes you really appreciate the price point, though, doesn't it? You know, on a restaurant menu, if you see hand-dived scallops, you think, oh, why is that so expensive? And then, you know, listening to you, you realise exactly why.
It's 6 degrees of sea temperature. That's why it's expensive.
I swam down for these. That's why it's that amount of money.
Yeah, it's cold. And when I first did it, and now I dive in a dry suit. Well, one, because it's, I suppose the main fact is it's with having so little time, it's quick to get in and out again.
What's on the menu at the moment then? Here we are, the opening weeks of August. Is this a good month on Jersey?
Yeah. I suppose especially the scallops are in absolutely pristine condition. I mean, I know we've just spoken about scallops, but they're in absolutely fantastic condition at the moment. Same with the crabs and the lobsters, very, very reasonable. And what we try and do with the shellfish, especially now when it's in plentiful supply, what generally happens is the price drops, which means the fishermen don't get an awful lot of money for their catch. So what we try and do is give them a really good price, a fair price, and we just try and sell as much of it as possible to keep them busy and to keep the whole thing going. And we've got a three de mer dish on, which we basically have on as a special, and that has just helped us turn over a lot more for like crabs and lobsters and prawns and that kind of stuff. And we use our own home smoked salmon, and we'll get mussels, and we'll serve
hungry.
Obviously the Jersey Royals.
which we can still get a hold of for a few weeks. And yeah, and it works really well. And then for dessert, we've still got local strawberries. Mm. And of course, the famous Jersey cream, which is, I just don't think you can beat anywhere in the world. The quality is just exceptional.
Can you tell us about your kitchen garden?
Yeah, well, kitchen garden is something I've been really involved in over the years. And when I first got to the hotel in sort of like 1990, it was run in a very sort of like traditional French fashion, I suppose, where we had lots of rows with like a row of, you know, perhaps four different types of lettuce, but you'd have a row of about 100 of each. And that's not really conducive to looking after the garden and making it work with the kitchen. Mm-hmm. So we basically split it up into boxes, small boxes, and we stagger the growing. So what it means from the chef's point of view, we've got lots of different varieties coming through into the kitchen over a greater period of time, and we don't get a glut. So I haven't all of a sudden got to use 100 cost lettuce or 100 oak leaf all at once, you know. I just get small amounts growing throughout the season. But we've got a fantastic... Actually, Malcolm's son, David, is really... got in tune with our garden, and we've actually grown some fantastic cresses. I mean, a lot of chefs like to use these little hits of flavour, and it could be, you know, anything from sunflower to beetroot, or another success we've had this year is watercress. And funnily enough, you don't actually need to grow it in water. And you just get this really peppery, beautiful deep green leaf, which is ideal for... We've actually got a beef dish on at the moment with a beef fillet. We serve that with a really sort of like classical French potato called a tartiflette with the fondant potato with some onion and rubbish on cheese on top. So... not too good for your waistline, but flavours, just, you know, as a treat, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
And we serve that with a little bit of this micro watercress and a red wine sauce. And that's served with a little, what we call it, in the kitchen we call it sticky beef, but it's actually part of a Jacob's ladder, which is from the rib of beef, which we cook for about 6 hours, really, really slowly. So it's just unbelievably tender, and most people actually say they prefer the sticky beef to the actual beef fillet, which is there are a couple of things.
I know you said that you don't deliberately have a glut of vegetables, but now's the time of year where people, you know, home growers have a lot of tomatoes and things, and we've got something in the current issue of Sainsbury's magazine, you know, recipes for extra, you know, if you've got lots of tomatoes. What do you have any ideas for using tomatoes or courgettes, or, you know, any ideas? Because otherwise we eat a lot of bruschetta, don't we?
Yeah.
day after day.
I think the whole subject of, if you like, preserving and having ideas for, if you like, gluts or time, not even having gluts. I mean, now is just a fantastic time for getting in touch with your local tomato growers. You know, if you've got anybody growing tomatoes locally, for example, now's the time to make your tomato soups, because during the winter, I know we can buy tomatoes generally all year round now, but they don't have the sugar content. So this is the time to, you know, roast them off with some, you know, a little bit of garlic and some onions and a tiny bit of celery and leek to give it that extra depth of flavour.
You can freeze some mega batches, couldn't you? You can make
them and freeze them, and they will give you a better quality soup, for example.
Yeah, they're just swelling on the vine at the moment, tomatoes, aren't they? They're just starting to really put on weight on the vine, beginning to colour up through August and into September. Yeah.
When are they going to go red? Mine are still green. When is it going to turn?
You live in the wrong place. We've
I'll move to Jersey.
Gorgeous weather here today.
We're going to have to let you get back into the kitchen because you've already told us, you know, how jam-packed your average day is on Jersey, Andrew.
Yeah, no worries at all. I get you know, so enthusiastic, I suppose.
You
know,
once
I get into the subject, and
No, that's great.
I keep waffling, sorry.
No,
I was just going to say, you're so busy that we're going to have to let you get back in the kitchen and get back to prep and all the rest.
Yeah.
But Andrew, we really appreciate your time.
Yep.
Thank you for joining us on Share Food.
Yes, thank you.
It's my pleasure. Great stuff.
Share Food with Sainsbury's Magazine. Food and drink brought to life by the team behind Sainsbury's very own food magazine.
I'll tell you what, Sarah, I think on this edition, the person who impressed me most was Andrew Baird, who lives, who breathes food.
Yeah.
And good food and local and sustainable and all of that. This is a man who hand dives for his own scallops. This is someone who smokes his own fish and meat. He grows a lot of his own veg.
Yeah.
As we were hearing, he's really passionate about
he's
tomatoes
so passionate.
As well.
Yeah. Very impressive. That's a kind of chef that you want around, isn't it? And you know, it's really fair to all the fishermen, and that's really nice to hear, isn't it?
Yeah, just one of a few gems on this edition of Share Food here on Share Radio. How's your food weekend shaping up?
Oh, this weekend, yes, it's good. Mm. But it's more my last week that was more interesting. Mm. I went to John Waite's cookery school in Crewe. He's so lovely. And we were actually making stuff for Christmas. So, you know, some coffee Swiss roll and some fig tartlets, getting ahead, and some cranberry scones. So that was amazing. I was very full. And actually, yesterday was our assistant food editor's birthday, and we had some incredible Marmite and cheese kind of danishes from this place that's just opened up near work called Albion. They were very tasty indeed.
Listen, we'll catch up with you on a future edition of Share Food here on Share Radio. Just a reminder, if all of this has inspired you to get cooking or get buying some really great ingredients, then share with us your creations using the hashtag IMadeThis. This is a podcast as well. It's downloadable via iTunes, via Share Radio's own website at shareradio.co.uk, and of course on the Share Radio mobile app as well. We'll catch you next time.